Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Beata, your host for Soul Purpose Healing. I hope that introductory video has inspired you to go tiny. No matter where you are, just go tiny, go smaller, reduce less, because we got a bunch of consumer addicts. Oh, my goodness. But I'm so glad to be here tonight for this very, very important topic. I didn't realize how controversial this documentary was until I was searching for a trailer to show you tonight on it. Oh, my goodness, the people are commenting everywhere. They even put together a panel of the main persons in this documentary, except for the female who was responsible for his sexual maturity, as I would say. But they have a panel on YouTube with the young man, the disabled young man, sitting there. So this is very controversial. I expect all of you to participate tonight to voice your opinion, your voice, your experience. I'm going to tell you, though, my belief about this whole thing and where it needs to go in terms of consciousness and third, fourth dimension transition. That's where I am. Soul Purpose Healing is all about taking us back into alignment with the creator of the cosmos, big universe, back in alignment with his love, with their love. I don't say he because it's no gender there. With their love of, their alignment of compassion, love, and wisdom. So get ready, get ready, get ready. So let's welcome our global family. I want the global family in on this too because it's an important topic, sex, race, and communication. We could also say sex, race, and disability. Is it interfering with our advancement to consciousness or our rise in consciousness? Sex, race, communication. Could be a rap song. Sex, race, communication. Sex, race, communication. I think I'm going to do a rap on that. Is it interfering or delaying the rise of consciousness? We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. But let's look at, go to our greeting for our global family. We got a global family here on the Female Solution. We are live in Blog Talk Radio, which is time to celebrate. Anytime we go live, we celebrate. So let's celebrate
Blog
now.
Talk Radio.
Yay!
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing, share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in
515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saobona. In Senegal, Langade. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. And may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the on-air radio network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
Yes, 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 we want to talk to you. That's why I'm here. I'm going to talk to you, but I'll stop talking as long as you're commenting. So I invite all of you global family to talk to me through Blog Talk Radio. You can call in 215-383-5863, or you can go to my YouTube page, Viata's Tiny House Village, and write your comments in. And I've got two Facebook pages open and live today. This is a great day. Moon was shining bright last night, so I'm getting all that moon energy. I was outside on the trampoline last night, taking in the moon with my clear crystals. I had a candle going. I had a incense going because I had prayed that the moon would shine through. The last couple of nights, we didn't see anything because it was so cloudy and rainy. And I said, listen, I need a clear sky last night with a bright moon. And it happened. It happened. I got a clear moon last night. So I was out there enjoying it for a while until the tree blocked it. Anyway, I got my cosmic curls out tonight because I need help tonight with this subject. This subject is so divisive. In fact, this documentary is so divisive. This event actually took place about 10 years ago, but they just brought out the documentary. And ooh-wee, the comments are like all over the place and opinions and beliefs. But we're talking tonight about consciousness raising. Is this sex, race, disability issue in this documentary interfering with rise in consciousness? Then we're going to talk tonight. Let's talk. But first, because we need some help tonight from our ancestors, as usual, we're going to bring on Becca Shea to help us invite the ancestors. That we need a lot of help tonight because this is a divisive topic. I didn't know how divisive it was until I started looking around at the comments. So let's bring in our drumming. And we got Becca Shea on video and audio to help us drum in. We need some help tonight. So, Becca Shea, let's go, Becca Shea. Uh-oh, Becca Shea went away for a minute. Let's bring Becca Shea back. Becca Shea is here. All right, Becca Shea, come on. Becca Shea, let's go. Let's go, Becca Shea, let's go.
And
hey!
Hey.
All right, ready. Yes, thank you. Wow, love it. Let's just breathe in that ancestral spirit, that wisdom, that suffering that has healed us, is helping us heal. Breathing in the wisdom of our ancestors tonight. And we've got, let's see, who's in the house here? Zelda, Monday Morning Mindfulness host, is here. She says we will definitely be listening, sharing, and commenting. Thanks for part two. My pleasure, my sister, pleasure. And the Empress Regina, the royalty's in the house. We bow to the Empress Regina. She says, great being, beloved. Thank you for joining us. And let me just check my Blog Talk studio. We got a couple people in the studio tonight. Wow. So thank you all. This is part two. Friday morning, I brought in the health and well-being aspect of this documentary called Tell Them You Love Me. And this is actually a true story that happened about 10 years ago in New Jersey. I can't have that accent, New Jersey. And it actually happened, and some people actually remember this in the news. But we're revisiting it because they got a documentary out. Oh, my goodness. Now, I was attracted to this like a magnet because once I started watching it late night, one night, the Johnson showed up. Oh, my goodness, the Johnson. That's my mother's maiden name. I have like 50 cousins in Chicago called Johnson. Johnson, it's a good slave name. Let me put it that way. That's all it is, a good slave name. So I got a lot of slaves, former slave owners' names in Chicago, relatives. So let's see, we have in this documentary, there's Derek Johnson, Daisy Johnson, she's a mother. Derek is the big brother. No, Derek is the autistic man. He's a man now. He's 40 years old. This happened when he was 30. And then John Johnson, oh my goodness, couldn't be more slave sounding than John Johnson. John Johnson is the older brother who has lived with his mother and his younger brother with this autistic personality, okay? And I want to start out tonight honoring all the mothers who have had to manage their autistic children. It ain't easy. It ain't easy. In fact, I found a video about that I want to play that kind of documents what's going on with autistic kids when they become adults, because
we're going to put them on the table.
That's the challenge that we have with this documentary, is that you've got a young man, Derek, they call him Demand in the documentary, who is now an adult, but he's autistic, and he's been living with his mother and his older brother all his life. And I want to just play one. I have a couple, but let me play this one first to just honor the mothers who have had to deal, challenge, live with, learn from. This is always a lesson for parents when they have autistic children. You have to become, guess what, more patient. So let's just watch this video about adult autistic, and I'm going to see if I can find the one that just talks about the younger children and honoring all the mothers and just having sympathy for what they have to go to. But here's what happens when autistic kids become adults. Let's just listen up.
We're going to put them on the table.
Oh, my goodness. I keep...
we're going to put them on the table for each child.
Okay, my videos are acting up.
We're going to put them on the table for each child, okay?
Brayden Gertz is getting his classroom ready for the start of another school year and a new group of students. They're not just any students. They all have autism spectrum disorder. And Brayden isn't just any teacher's assistant. He has it, too, and knows firsthand the challenges his students face.
Some of the kids have issues, like they don't, talk. And we're trying to help them speak.
That specialized care is crucial for development. Each year, we spend $11.5 billion on children with autism for everything from educational programs to medicine.
But as they move into the adult-based care settings, they really struggle to identify providers that are comfortable caring for them.
Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center has helped to open one of the few clinics in the country dedicated to caring for adults with autism. Hank says once patients like Brayden move away from their pediatricians, many have nowhere to go and often fall far behind on things like checkups, immunizations, and cancer screenings.
On top of that, they're using ERs more. They're needing emergency resources much more frequently. And so our hope is to provide them a place where that isn't the case and that they actually get the same level of care as the rest of the population.
Because social interaction can be a challenge for those with autism, staff members often communicate with patients online. Beyond medical care, they also assist with finding education and job opportunities so patients like Brayden can continue to grow.
There's almost a sense of relief from them having finally found someone that understands where they're coming from and is willing to work with them in the way that they need.
At Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center, this is Clark Powell reporting.
Now, when I look at something like this, it's like money, 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 money. The medical system looks forward to having adult autistic people, because most people are looking for a solution to the autistic personality in the medical system. And if you were with me on Friday, you know that that's not my solution. I would highly recommend a microbiome therapy. So that's just a view of adult children, which we're going to talk about the case with the Johnson. You've got an adult autistic person who is benefiting the medical system greatly. And I want to open up today, is there another option for this person? Are there other possibilities for him to live his life that's not on drugs and in the medical system? But here's another, this is actually the video I wanted to share, how raising children with autism, what is that like? Well, here's just what that's like to raise children with autism.
For son Kevin years ago.
I had visions of him being on a baseball team and going to college, being president one day. You know, we all have high expectations of our children. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way.
Kevin, known as Mookie to the family, was diagnosed with autism at age 2.
Autism is considered a neurodevelopmental disorder, meaning that you don't acquire it, you develop it, you're born with it. Your brain, it's hardwired in a different way that your typical child affects basically two areas of your behavior and development. One is what is called like social affect, meaning what...
Now, let me just pause there. If you were with me on Friday, she's not telling the whole truth, because children who develop autism in their infancy is probably because of a jab. Let's continue.
Your social skills, quality, as well as interest. There's many of them that don't develop functional language. You're nonverbal. There's some that are polyverbal. And the ones that can talk, there's something peculiar about it.
Barbara is the mother of 3 children, Kevin, Jasmine, who is currently an honors student about to graduate from college, and her youngest, Tiffany.
She was a year old, and she wasn't speaking. She was constantly making the same kind of noises and sounds and gurgling sounds like Kevin was, and I got scared. So I took her to a neurologist that had her diagnosed, and he did all the diagnostics on her, and the test came back to say that she had autism.
Now let me pause here. I'm going to pause throughout these types of videos where going to a neurologist, going to a heart surgeon, going to any person in the medical system will give you what? A diagnosis, so they can give you what? More drugs.
Barbara and her family care for her children at home, but there have been times where each has been placed in a residential home. They will never be able to live independently. Barbara has enlisted the help of Ruth, an aide from HeartShare, who comes several times a week. A typical day is anything but typical.
My day starts at 5 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 2 o'clock because the kids don't sleep. They get up really early. And Kevin, as you can hear in the background, he makes noises. We call him Frank Sinatra because he starts making these sounds and stuff. I would give them showers, give them breakfast. In Kevin's instance, I have to make his lunch every morning. I get them dressed. Sometimes Tiffany does not want to get up in the morning, so she starts screaming, knocking things over. So I have to step back a little bit, take a deep breath, try to talk her down, sing to her a little bit because music calms her down. We call her the singing diva because she loves to sing. She loves music. Make their breakfast, get them ready for school. It can be a nightmare sometimes because when I'm in this house with the both of them, by myself, I get the feeling like Kevin looks at Tiffany and Tiffany looks at Kevin, and it seems like they say, let's get her. Because they get into everything you can possibly think of. Tiffany knocks things over. Then she sets Kevin off, and he starts biting himself when he gets upset.
Unfortunately, many of my mom's arms are at the ear, have to take medication. There's a lot of strain as well in the family. As far as I know, the rates of divorce among the parents of autistic children is high, so it has to create some...
So you see where these mothers and their children, eventually everybody has to get on some drug to cope. Is there a better option? Is there a better way?
Trans, yeah, or some strains, because there may be a difference of opinions as to how to address learning issues. The father may be too stressed out as to what the situation. There's some that walk out of the home because they cannot deal with it. You know, then the parent is left alone, you know, dealing with the situation. Very unfortunate cases in which the parents have gotten so overwhelmed, they have tried to hurt their children. You know, unfortunately, it's in the press. You know, there's like many cases that have come, you know, to the public attention of that. But it is expected, you know, that these parents are very overwhelmed, and of course, they're going to carry an emotional burden.
With the children aging, something had to be done to ensure the safety and well-being at a time when their parents will not be around to care for them. Barbara knew this and has planned accordingly.
I know I'm not going to always be here for them, and I already got them on lists. whether it's for residential in the near future. And I don't want to wait until the last minute. I don't want to put that burden on my daughter. And then another burden, it is you have to go through guardianship. My type of mentality is they're my biological children. Why do I have to go and get them, you know, to get guardianship for someone who I brought into the world? But I understand it now, because you have to make sure that their needs and their life, everything that they own, is protected.
I think the ideal for an autistic person is to have both the family and the place to go, because they sometimes need a little bit distance too from their own home. And the services they are offered, they get something, a different life experience, they get other people to see, they get go to places. I think it's very important that family would go and get services for the autistic, for their children.
Him having his disability, it made me realize that you can't take life for granted. People start complaining about their children, oh, shut up, or you talk too much. I have to say, you have to back up and realize that what you have is a God-given gift. Do you know what I would give if my kids could talk too much, or they're loud, or they could constantly, mommy, mommy, mommy? I said, never tell your child to shut up, because one day you have to be careful what you wish for. They might just give you what you want, and then you're going to be in my shoes, and then you're going to be wishing, oh, man, why did I say that? I just live life to the fullest and make sure my children are happy, which thank God they are, and like to think that I'm doing the right thing by them. They didn't come with instructions. I can only go by trial and error and learn from the errors.
Still, there are moments when Barbara reflects on the joys of motherhood like any other mom does. She proudly displays a drawing from Tiffany.
You cannot say that they don't understand what you're saying or understand what's going on around them. We cannot put a limit on what they are comprehending. I don't take my children's feelings and for granted. I mean, they do what they do, and they give you their best, and their best is what I'm able to accept, only on the grounds that they feel that this is what I can do. I can't do anymore. But that, just that little bit, just this, I'd rather have this, and this is true. I'd rather have this than win lotto, because this was made from the heart.
That woman's soul, bless her, because she is taking her experience with a beautiful attitude of learning a lesson. She's obviously growing in patience. In fact, she's demonstrating patience with her autistic children. Some people are probably on a drug of some kind, a sedative, but this woman that I just showed to you is demonstrating to us the lesson for many parents who have to live with autistic children. Now, I'm here to suggest there's a better way, though. Oh, my goodness. The Johnsons in the documentary have decided that drugs are the answer for everything. And many of these mothers and parents think drugs are the answer. In fact, I was at a farmer's market Friday morning. I went to the farmer's market. And I was waiting to get my knife sharpened, so I had to wait a whole hour. So I said, let me just buy something to eat and sit down on a bench and eat. And so I sat down, and one of my friends, who's a massage therapist, showed up. And she sat down, and we started talking. And I was telling her about my show that I had done on Friday. She said, you know, most of my clients, they're not into alternative therapies at all. And she said, and I was telling her, well, you know, these Johnsons are black people. And she said, well, most of the clients she has, minorities, they don't do alternative very well. you know, she might be able to give them an essential oil and a massage. But when she it comes time to suggest some alternative therapy, that's not on their radar. They don't think that way. If they have insurance, they definitely don't think that way. So we're looking at a society of people who have gotten hooked on, addicted to drugs for therapy instead of more natural therapies that I'm going to show to you, like using your brain and using meditation. There's an amazing testimony I'm going to share about a woman who had an autistic son, and she started to just change her mental idea of what this meant and how she could change her son. So we're going to take a break, but we've got a comment from Zelda Robinson, my sister from another mother, and our Monday morning mindfulness host. She says Chaka Khan, for those of you who may not be old enough, Chaka Khan is a singer, musician, amazing sister, performer. She has a nephew, has autism, which is how I really became aware of it. Institutions inoculate children when they are born, and we see the results of it as they age. That is the sad reality. Inoculate, we use that word instead of the V word, which is harming all children. So inoculation is the thing. And when these parents experience sudden infant death syndrome, many of them have not pointed to the inoculation as a cause. But as I talked to you on Friday, cerebral palsy, autism, all begin with an inflammation of the brain. And then that affects the neurological system. So many of them can't talk anymore. Neurological developments show up. They're nonverbal. They can't speak. And that's what happened to Derek Johnson in the documentary. He couldn't speak from the time he was an infant. So we're going to look at what happened with this family that really disturbs me and how parents, mothers, want to keep their children, their babies, their whole life, even when they have a disability. So that's part of the problem in the third dimension, fourth dimension transition that we're going through. We got to let go of these relationships that are no longer serving either party. It doesn't serve the child or the parent to keep calling them my baby, my kid, when they're 30 years old. Even if they're disabled, there can be a transformation in the brain of the parent that says, I am going to do all I can to help this soul develop and become all that this soul was meant to be. But you know what's interfering with that? They wear white coats. That's all I can say. So let's take a break. Got a brand. Go back to the brand here. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to share with you some more information about alternatives that can help parents and their disabled children. But let's take a quick commercial break, though.
Hi, I'm James Hammonds, author of When Shepherds Kill. Shepherds Kill is about an alderman in the city of Chicago who gets murdered. And his friend, another alderman, who searches for his killer. In the meantime, the city police arrest an individual who is innocent, causes a city riot, and all of this happens in the context of drug dealing, Russian money being spent in Chicago. It's just full of excitement, full of thrill. You can get this book online at Amazon, Crockington Channels, at your local bookstores, everywhere. Thank you.
And one more.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world. Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. See you soon.
Now, we have in the documentary with the Johnsons, we had the woman who was seeking to help this young man. She was working with what was called facilitated communication. So we want to review that now, and because in her trial, scientists decided that that was not legitimate therapy, okay? But she actually won her probation 2 years after she went to prison because she presented the evidence that actually said facilitated communication can actually help people. So let's learn a little bit about this type of therapy that Stubblefield is the woman who was the therapist. She used this to help this disabled autistic young man become more mature and actually communicate better. And this is all about sex, drugs, and communication.
The communication program that I specialize in here at Henderson Haven is facilitated communication. It is life-changing for some of the people we work with. It has opened up lines of communication no one thought possible. Autism logs me of words, but it is not my good look.
Facilitation is not a guiding. It is not a pulling of a hand toward the keyboard. It actually is resistive input so that whoever is doing the typing has to reach harder and push harder. And the reason for that is that in the joints is where you get your proprioceptive information, how you know where your body is in space. And if you rely on greater input, resistive input, to be able to direct your hand where you want it to go and have purposeful typing. You learn to dance with that person is what it is. And so at first you dance this way. And then as that child gets better and better and better, then the next set of proprioceptive receptors, joint receptors that tell you where you are in time and space, are back here at the elbow. So then a lot of times what you see is we start to support at the elbow, and that's all the support they need.
Facilitated communication is often thought to be about typing great sentences and things, and it can also be as simple as making a choice between, do I want to wear a blue shirt or a red shirt? Do I want chicken tonight or pizza? Do I want to take a shower first or shave first? Facilitated communication allows them to be able to make choices and intentional choices. What do you want other people to know about Henderson Haven? I don't know what it is, but something is emotional right now. The body has changed. AJ says long sanity and hears me and pushes through the shitty outfit. I think we can reach kids when other people can't because we keep coming and we're willing to see them. We want them to be successful. We're only successful when they're successful.
So that's the therapy that Marjorie Ann Stubblefield, the therapist in the documentary, used to help Derek Johnson. Over a year now, let me just emphasize that. For over a year, this woman worked with this disabled autistic young man to help him develop the skill of typing his thoughts notes and putting it on a screen. And as she said in that video, it's like a dance with the person. The therapist and the student or the customer are dancing, and she's helping lift up his arm to type. Now, this in the documentary, they demonstrated this over and over again, that this was the therapy that the therapist was using for Derek, this 30-something-year-old man who was disabled. But what do mom and the older brother say? Well, at first they were really excited about it because it was something they weren't doing and it was something new that they're teaching their brother, Daisy Johnson, John Johnson. Those are the mother and the older brother. Wow, look at this. We got a new therapy called facilitated communication. So for a whole year, this woman is working closely with this disabled, cerebral palsy designated autistic young man, and they fall in love, so she says. Now, this is where it gets real sticky and controversial, because she says they fell in love, but the question was it consensual sex? Because that's what it ended up happening. They're having intimacy, the two, the disabled and the therapist. Now, what I didn't bring out on Friday was that this woman was married with two children, okay? So on the one hand, she had some mental issues herself to get involved with a person like this who wasn't very attractive at all. Her husband, on the other hand, was dark, tall, dark, and handsome. She's pale and European, and she married a tall, dark, and handsome musician, a concert player, and all that, and she falls in love with this disabled, autistic, not very attractive man, no job, no, crazy, crazy circumstances. How does this happen in people's lives? As they said in that last video, you're giving them attention that they don't get at home. You're working with someone who has been diagnosed as disabled, unable to do certain things, they can't have sex, they can't talk, blah, 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 blah. And what happens? A woman shows up who happens to be of another color, and the Johnsons are like, well, we'll work with her. But then once they find out that there's intimacy involved, that was the shock for the family, is that that couldn't possibly be happening. And then there was some physical bruises on Derek's back indicating that they felt she raped him, that there was some type of aggressive behavior, and that young man was in a position where he had bruises on his back. Nyah, 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 nyah. So this story is just so interesting, fascinating. It's like a drama. It's like reading a book, actually. And so we're looking into healing a problem, though. We want to talk tonight about, can you heal autism, cerebral palsy, on the same level, Martin G, on the same level that it was created? In other words, can you heal jab injuries, neurological damage, brain injuries in the same way with another drug? Is this sound insane? This insane as me that does to me. They don't consciously. They're not consciously realizing the parent and the older brother or any caretaker. Are you consciously realizing what caused the problem? And there's a saying that you can't heal a problem on the same level of unconsciousness. You have to move to consciousness. That's what we're talking about tonight. There was an unconscious choice to jab your child, to inoculate, as Zelda said. I'm going to say it's unconscious because we don't think about the consequences when they present that in the hospital. You just gave birth to a baby, and, oh, you got to have a hepatitis B. Hepatitis B, they're not having sex. What's that about? Oh, okay, I got to go along with the system. Those are the type of decisions parents are faced with in the hospital. Unconscious, okay, let's go ahead and do it. Consciously, you would say, oh, hell no. Not doing that after all I've learned about those things, consequences, side effects, no. But problem is created on that level, now that there's the consequences are manifested in no speech, can't move, you're slow, disabled, all that, how is it that you want to heal this on a medical level again? That's the question we're asking tonight for parents and even for those who are debating this documentary, because that's what it ends up being. Either the facilitated communication is the tool you want to use to try and undo the problem, or the another drug. Which one is it? And though both cases that I've shown you tonight, these parents are choosing another drug. Help us. Ancestors, help us. And many of, so far, the comments I'm seeing on YouTube about this documentary, because it just came out last Friday, and so far, all the YouTubers that are joining in to make their points, so far the comments are like, that bitch, blah, 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 she raped him, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, I don't know about that. Because what happens is Ms. Daisy Johnson decided that after they put this woman in jail, that she damaged her son, because now her son is self-pleasuring himself, masturbating. Let's just say her son started masturbating after he had, this disabled man had sex relations with a woman for the first time in his life. And after they put her in jail for, quote, raping him, now he's pleasuring himself, and they don't like that. So what does mom say? I'm going to play that scene for you after this other. In fact, let me see if I can pull that scene up, because it just broke my heart when I saw that. Let me see if I can play that. It's on Netflix. And
masturbate.
Okay, she says it right off the bat. Let me see if I can show you. I want to show you this scene because it's just so powerful about the ignorance or the unconscious state that a parent can be in that causes them to do more harm, in my opinion, to that child or that person. This is a scene. This is the end of the documentary, and this is for educational purposes only. We're not in here to steal any money. So listen to this. This is the end of the documentary where the mom is so upset because her son is doing things he shouldn't be doing. Okay, here we go.
There's another, somebody else who uses facilitated communication who knew the man and was friends with the man. And he said, look, if I was the man, I would rather have...
Now that's the therapist who was in jail for 2 years because they accused her of raping the son.
Relationship with you and lost it, then never to have had it in the first place. So I hope that he's right.
But here comes,
here
comes the scene with the mother, Miss Daisy Johnson, talking about how this woman right here ruined her son.
She could all think that there was damage done. Yes, it was. And it's still going on. I had to put him on medication because he masturbates. He has this urge, and it's like an itch that he can't scratch. And it's hard enough to give him a life without him going through that. And she did that. Because if you don't ever strike that match or do whatever, how will you ever know?
Hello, you good? Katie? One of the tough things about this whole process is that there was this idea that, he can do all these wonderful things. And then to have to, looking at everything that was taking place, then say, he can't. And in a sense, I kind of felt as though I was diminishing his value. You know, Derek can't do that. Going through that process of having to recognize that, yeah, he is really disabled, and that's fine. He can't do all the other things that other people can do, and that's perfectly fine because we're going to be all right regardless.
Okay. Oh, you can show him that smile. Yeah, so here I am.
The psychiatrist determined that Derek was deemed incapable and incompetent of taking care of himself. Well, I knew. And knowing and accepting it and just embracing, just loving for who he is. No matter what or how strong he gets, he's still my child. He will always have that younger mindset. And, you know, he's 40 years old. And yeah, that's where we are.
I don't love him no less. I don't love him no more.
He's my baby.
Oh, my. Okay. That just, on one level, saddens me. And yet, that's why I'm a holistic life coach, to observe things like that without judgment and realize the Johnsons are where they are, accepting your disability. I accepted. You're just a poor, disabled young, older man. There's nothing we can do about it. We just accept whatever the doctors tell us. Not in my world. Nope. And as I said, the first time, the video I showed you earlier of the mother who was talking about her two children, she's learning the lessons she needs to learn. That's a divine experience, where she doesn't see the need to change anything, but her attitude is like, well, I'm learning so many lessons. Okay, sweetie, you just keep learning the lessons and then prepare for somebody else to take care of them. That's the way it is. But this woman, my baby, and people are debating whether Miss Stubblefield was right about trying to introduce him to a different therapy, and then introducing him to a pleasure that he never had. And people are debating that. We're divided once again. Yeah, Zelda says, parents are often so energy depleted and mentally and emotionally drained, they sometimes ignore small warning signs until it's too late. Yeah, parents are ignorant a lot of times. That's why, as a doula, I've tried to educate women, especially before they get pregnant, when they're pregnant, some of the things they need to be conscious about. And then for this person, my baby, yeah, that's really heart-wrenching. Prayers for the family. Ooh, it's time for action. But the action that was taken, they didn't like that action. So I'm going to share with you now better options, where the parent exercises a change in their mental perspective about who this soul is. We're talking about quantum healing now. We're going to spend the rest of the time, now that you've seen the quote problem and the reaction is, let's just put him on another drug, or let's just accept him the way he is because we can't do anything about it. Well, there's something called quantum healing, where you take your cosmic curls here. That's why I'm wearing my cosmic curls tonight. This is helping me think clearly and hear, more important, to hear cosmic guidance, divine energy. This is what cosmic curls are all about, in my opinion, to hear guidance about things, situations like this, where a soul comes into a body and is abused by the medical system. They're injured by the medical system. Their brain swells, neurological damage. Parents are in an unconscious state. They don't know what to do, but The doctors are there, men and women in the white coats. We know what to do. We got the solution for you. Pill, or it's in this syringe. We got the solution for you. Well, I don't operate like that, so I'm going to present to you a quantum healing thought where men like Joe Dispenza, who's really the best, one of the best teachers on this, Bruce Lipton, and so many more are teaching us how to use our mind and our emotions to change situations like that. So this is a woman I'm going to share with you next who gives her testimony about what happens. No, she gives her testimony on how she changed her autistic son. Where did it go? Okay, can you hear her? And this is so beautiful because it takes... Okay, she opened her heart. That's the name of it. She opened her heart to new possibilities. That's what this is. Next one is all about. This woman opened her heart to new possibilities of healing her autistic child. And this is the type of lessons that Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton,
so as I got better,
and other holistic therapists teach. And what I see in on the black community especially, but in Hispanic and minority communities, is that they don't want to take advantage of alternative therapies. They don't reach out to alternative therapies. I know as I came along training in the holistic health field, I would usually be the only woman of color in the room. So there was something going on even 30 years ago when I was training to be a life coach that the minority community just went into that. Now, more than ever, you do have more minority men and women teaching holistic truth and options, other possibilities. So I want to share with you this woman who opened up her heart to possibility of healing her autistic son, not accepting the medical system's program or prescription. And what happened was a miracle and what was intended to happen. So listen to one person's perspective on quantum healing.
He got better, and as he got better, I got better. And things escalated. And I am so happy to say now that my little boy that could not leave our home, is out in the world. I came with a lot of desperation in my heart, but a tiny flicker of hope because I had a lot of faith that there was possibility for myself and for my son. My son is also autistic. He just turned 8 2 weeks ago. My health was suffering and his little body was in constant torment to the point where we had not been able to leave our home in like 4.5 years without a 3-hour ordeal to get out the door. And so during that time, I had given up my business, my career, my relationship was suffering, but I knew that inside this tortured little body, there was possibility. And I just had to figure out why. Now, I couldn't rely on therapists and therapies and medications because my son would not participate. And it created more torment in his little body. So I knew when I came in February that something was happening when I was meditating. It was happening for me. And so if it could happen for me, it could possibly happen for him. And
whoa, that's a new possibility. Go ahead.
And so I wanted to figure out what was happening for me so that I could figure out how to do it for him. So I came with a big notebook and a lot of nervousness because I had not been away from him, not even in the bathroom, not even for hardly 5 minutes. We were attached at the hip, literally. And so it was a huge accomplishment to come to this, and I was quite worried about him being gone. And I had my notebook, and I took vigorous notes. When you started to speak about the science behind what was happening, my heart lit on fire because I knew, I have notes, this is going to heal Sam. I know this will work. And I knew it. That little tiny flicker of hope became a little bit bigger flame. And by the time I went home, I was already loving my meditations because they made me feel so good when nothing else did. I went home and I approached this with a burning desire in my heart. I used to have to hold my son, and he's a big boy, and I'm a small person. I used to have to hold him tight in my arms, sometimes for 2 or 3 hours to get 1 hour of sleep out of that boy. And I would sit there and I would do it because 1 hour of sleep was everything to me. So I decided that instead of sitting there holding him in desperation and struggle, that I was going to sit there and hold him in love. And I was going to hold him in possibility. And I'm not telling you every time I was sitting there for 2 or 3 hours to get 1 hour of sleep, I was in total bliss. I went from anger to fear to doubt to a little bit of love. And then I went back to fear, and then I went to, oh, maybe a little bit more love. But over time, in a very short time, my son started asking to just lie beside me. He didn't need me to squeeze him anymore. And he started to sleep for more than 2 hours. He slept for 4.5 hours. I thought he died. I thought I died. I woke up. We were still alive. So I was like, hey, this is great. I'm going to do this more. So I would just lie. I laid down beside him. It's true.
You're doing fine.
I wasn't sitting. I was laying down. I laid down beside him, and I would just send him my hopes for him. And it was working really well. You know, the sleep was extending, and he seemed happier. And I remember in one moment of doubt, I was thinking, you know, Renee, don't do that. This is working. Why are you doubting again? And I thought, if I can just bring up an image of him in his, one of his happiest moments, and they were still pretty fleeting, that I could imagine his little face when he was regulated and he was happy. He had just, I remember the day he built this little Lego creation and he was showing me and he was so proud of his work and he was so calm and he had a little smile on his face and he was looking at me. He had that little twinkle in his eye, you know, he was so proud of himself. And so I pulled that image into my mind and I thought, my boy is so beautiful. My boy is not broken. And I'm going to think of him like this instead of all of the challenges that we have. I'm going to think of this moment, even though it's fleeting, and I'm going to grow it because I know it's possible. And in that moment, I had been feeling that this diagnosis was my fault and that I was somehow failing him because he couldn't do many of the things that children are supposed to do. And I pictured his face, and he looked so perfect to me, and that little twinkle in his eye. And I thought, you know what, Renee? You made him. There's a bit of him that came from you. And if he is that wonderful, maybe there's a little bit, just maybe like a tiny little spark of that in you. And the moment I felt that, my heart, I thought my ribs were breaking. My heart expanded with so much love, not only for him, but like some for myself. And after that happened to me, it was much easier for me to keep my focus on the possibility, but not only for him, because I started to see that I was doing better. And as I was doing better, he was doing better because these kids, they co-regulate with you. You know, if your nervous system is messy, their nervous system is twice as messy. And so as I got better, he got better. And as he got better, I got better. And things escalated. And I am so happy to say now that my little boy that could not leave our home, is out in the world. And that is an answered prayer for me because I had two goals as I was healing him. I thought, I want to be able to walk out this door not in distress and torment. I want to see him want to leave this house because he feels safe. And I want to stand in the driveway and feel the sun on us and know that this is not a fleeting moment, that this is a possibility for every day for the rest of his life. And I also thought, I loved him, and he was comfortable with me. I mean, we were attached at the hip, literally. And I just wanted the world to see him, to know him. I was even aiming low. I thought maybe like 5 or 6 people, if they could just know him, and he would talk with them and connect with them, and they would get to see a bit of that beauty in his heart. But I was aiming low, and I've learned not to aim low. I'm going to aim high from now on. And about 3 weeks ago, we homeschool, and we're part of this little, beautiful little community of these little tortured geniuses, you know, they blow my mind. And we had scheduled this event to go to a park, and I was so happy because we're going to go to a park with other people, and he's excited about it. And then we're from Colorado, thunder, the rain, you know, on top of a mountain. Nobody wanted to go. They were afraid they were going to get struck dead. And so we were a little disappointed. So I asked my son, I said, hey, they're going to call off the event because of the thunder and lightning. What do you say we maybe offer to have everybody here at our house? And this was a stretch because before this healing started to occur, there were 3 people that could come to our house. Myself, my husband, and sometimes my mother, his grandmother. Anybody else, he would hide like a feral animal under the table, and I would ask people to go, and pretty soon I just quit asking people to come over. We were absolutely isolated. So I took a risk, and I asked him, I said, Sam, what do you think? It's going to be about 18 kids and their parents, at least one parent per kid, maybe 2. And maybe some of these kids have some siblings. What do you think? Would you like to have them come over so we can still have our gifts together? He looked at me and he goes, yeah. And I was like, do you understand what this means? I want to explain one more time. There's going to be 18 kids, and that we've rearranged our house, so our living room is like Lego fantasy land. All of his stuff's out there. There's no way I can put it anywhere else. And he used to not want anyone to touch his things. His things were like his connection to happiness, and they were a part of him. He used to tell me, my memories are in those things. I don't want anybody else touching them. And so I said, you know, I've got like 2 hours, so if these people come, they're going to be in our space. And I'm not going to be able to put away your things, maybe like a couple handfuls of special things. But all of your things are going to be out, and these are kids. And you know what happens with kids? They touch your stuff. They have no boundaries usually. And so I said, do you understand that that's going to be part of this? And if these people come, it's going to be really hard to get them to leave. I can't just say, hey, we're not into it anymore. All of you 20-some people, you know, hit the road. Hope you don't get struck by lightning, you know. So I explained it to him in detail. And he said, yeah, that's okay. And I'm just thinking, oh, my goodness. Okay, belief in possibility. All right, let's do it. So we're sitting there, and a couple kids come in. It's okay. And, of course, I'm on pins and needles just waiting for this to not be okay. A couple more kids come in. Some more kids come in. Parents and kids come in. We don't have a huge house, our house.
So I'm going to stop there because I think the message is clear, at least. For me, I want to know what you think. What is the difference between that parent and the Johnson parent who has accepted her child's disability and doesn't think alternative therapy will make a difference? Well, when I was watching the documentary, there was a woman, one of the students or one of the people featured in the documentary was a woman who could barely speak. And as she spoke, they had to put the words on the screen. And she reminded me actually of one of my aunts, my mother's sister. She was just like one of my mother's sisters. So I'm relating to this documentary on so many levels. The Johnsons are all my relatives and the cousins. And then this woman comes in who looks like one of my mother's aunts. One of my mother's aunts. So she said she went to the courtroom and watched this trial. And what she summarized, there were three things that determined Marjorie Stubblefield's guilt or the result of the trial. They were race, sex, and disability. And I thought about that for sure. Race, sex, and disability in that courtroom were the primary issues that convinced the jury, I guess, to cause this woman to go to prison for 2 years. And I want to talk just a little bit about the race issue, because that's what's coming up in these comments on YouTube now about this documentary. Race is for sure coming up. And I think about, what's his name? Morgan Freeman was asked, how do you heal or get rid of racism? And he said, you stop talking about it. It's like, what? You can't stop talking about racism. You can't stop talking about race. Well, that's one of the problems in this documentary altogether, the causing the division, I think, is that we're looking at the race of these two people in the story, the disabled young man and the facilitator or the therapist, and we're saying, and that's what, why she was accused of raping this young man, because how could that be? Even though she's married to a man of color, a dark-skinned man with two children, it wasn't even about race. It's about mental conditioning, mental status, mental state. Both of these people in some way were unbalanced. The disabled young man was really imbalanced. And then the other therapist was unbalanced on a level, because even her mother said she didn't think she did anything wrong. But the people who judged her said her own husband called her a narcissist and a liar. So I looked at both of these characters in terms of wanting to heal, both of them needing to heal on some level, coming together, being intimate, both needing healing, which is what happens in a lot of relationships these days, and yet quantum healing was starting to be introduced, because when you're having a relationship with someone where you're teaching them how to communicate, that was the other issue, was the issue of race, sex, and communication. When you're in for a whole year, you're interacting with someone and you're working on improving their communication. What happens in that situation? You can't help but become closer, more intimate, more loving, maybe more considerate, that you develop this relationship in a way that quantum healing has to be in the forefront of any type of therapy as you see progress. I'm interested to know your comments, if you have comments, and we want to leave out race on this. Please leave out race, because there's the woman observed in the courtroom, that was the driving force in the jury probably making their decision, and the mother came in with Derek Johnson and dragged him in front of the jury and said, look at this poor black kid, black man, and look at that woman over there. She's an abuser. She raped him. And not even thinking about the culture. To me, it's more an issue of culture. This, what did she call her? She called herself, no, her son said she was a God. This was a God-fearing, Southern-rooted African-American family. And this able-bodied woman raped a disabled man. Those are the quotes from the people, the Johnsons. The Johnsons were saying, you're the victim. They were shaming her. They're the victim. Shame on her for trying to introduce him to, well, sex and other things. And then him taking it to another level and self-pleasuring. But the God-fearing, Southern-rooted African-American family, are you accepting your title as a God-fearing, Southern-rooted African-American family? Is that how you see yourself? Yes. In this case, yes. And so with that title, with that identity in my mind comes belief system. God-fearing, that means the Bible, but you're using these drugs from Big Pharmaceutical, which is in Revelation, it says that's a deception, it's witchcraft. But that culture, the culture of God-fearing, Southern-rooted African-American families is, you got to accept what comes to you. He's disabled, accept it. Go to your doctor. This is the other cultural issue. You got to go to a doctor and get the solution. Whereas when you are open to possibilities that you, if you change your thinking, you can change your child's thinking. And the meditation, this is the final word, and then I think we have a caller in the studio, and I'm going to read some comments. I think the biggest issue here with the woman whose autistic son was changed by changing herself is meditating instead of medicating. We have a culture of people who believe medication is the solution. When the quantum belief, the cosmic order of things today in 2024, in going from third dimension to fourth and fifth dimension, not medicate on pharmaceutical, witchcraft, Zionist order of things, it's meditate in nature. And that, to me, is why this documentary is going to be controversial unless people can see it from that perspective, that we have a culture of people who believe in medicating, drugs, and more drugs, instead of meditating, which is how the woman changed her reality with her autistic son, and he became more normal and healed and a person with a life. So in the studio or Blog Talk or Facebook, we have Naima Latif said, I learned from hypnotherapist Dolores Cannon that souls choose to be born with disabilities in order to have an impact on the people around them. Absolutely. In fact, that I don't know if you missed it, or the first woman I showed you, she is demonstrating her acceptance of the disability. There's peace in the house, and she's learned lessons. She's talking about all the lessons she's learning. I didn't see that in the Johnson family. And then Naima says, people with disabilities help others to discover their own ethics and values by exposing them. Absolutely. True, very true. I believe that when you have synchronicities like I had, the Johnsons are in my family, and I was pointed to this document. I was directed to this documentary to bring out the hypocrisy, the conflict, and the opportunity to change this situation. If people look at it in a way that says, let's try medicating, not medicating, but meditating, and then we don't have to have mom calling her 40-year-old son her baby for the rest of his and her life. These are just options. But otherwise, yeah, there's plenty of lessons. But to say that woman raped him and she's calling her names and she's a horrible person, when what came to that young man was a little life in him, having the relationship he had with her, there was a life. Okay, I lost my studio for a minute. I don't know what that's about. Okay, so go back to the studio. So let me go to Blog Talk Radio, because that's what we have here. And let's see, we have a caller in the studio. Let's see, 706-202, your mic is open. It looks like Brother Kwame Sunhorse.
Good evening. Welcome. Sister Viata. How are you this evening?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very grateful, and thanks for asking. You know, you spoke about this weekend. You know, it's gotten a lot of more publicity, and people are now comparing the race and that part. And it's really controversial because you know, this is a reverse situation, because if that had been in reverse, you know, that there would have been a different court story. So the part that we're looking at, that someone has to the forefront to see what is going on with a child with cerebral palsy and how someone is capable of bringing out what's in that young man, because it was not a boy, he was a man. And the part for her and what she did in that interaction between her and him is part of what we see now in most of our movies and things that we see today, is the whole part of the European woman and the black man, or the black man and the European woman. And these are the things in which are now challenging for us. There is the stigma that's still in our community. I just came off of King's Corner, and what we had for that show for this evening was a real good topic that we have to look at. As far as King's Corner, it was on Expect to Live, the hidden health crisis for black men. And this is what the discussion was amongst these men. It was about 50 men on this Zoom call. And we're talking about issues that pertains to black men and the things of what's going on that's killing. And it's not homicide. The most thing that was most causing of death is diet and blood pressure and those type of things that are complicated in black men's community and in our black community within. And, you know, they were even giving examples of 30 and young 40-year-olds having strokes at that age now in the community, amputees from diabetes at young men in their 20s. So we've got a lot of more issues, you know, have the autism. And even the part of when we spoke on this last week, and looking at the really the part of autism becoming so into the medical field, is because it was once called schizophrenia. And then they changed some of the statistics, the diagnosis of it, and then it became autism. And so we're looking at what is it affecting to cause that child to develop autism? And these are the things that we have to look at, what's being put in the community that we're consuming that creates these type of children, you know. So that's very important as how we see this, you know. And this movie is bringing some attention, because we're having a lot of especially depopulation in our community, because a lot of young black women are not having children and choosing not to, and choosing to have careers. And so we're looking at a big change in the population as new life that we're bringing into the world. So it's a lot put in that movie that we have to begin to look at and see just what is it showing us in our community.
Yeah, and when you mentioned diet and high blood pressure, you know, I lived with a man for almost 40 years who had high blood pressure the whole time. And I realized that his blood pressure was high because he had not healed his childhood traumas. That's not early on. I kind of learned that maybe 20 or 30 years into the relationship. So a lot of what the discussion about diet and dis-ease is about men admitting that they have traumas. What do they call it? The adverse childhood experience, ACEs, there's been a lot of research on how a high ACEs score determines whether adults will have dis-ease, high blood pressure, cancer, all that, if they have high ACEs score. What is ACEs? Adverse childhood experience. It could be death of a parent, abuse, sexual abuse. There are a number of abuses that black men have gone through, all men have gone through. It's like not really a race thing, but black men especially are not able to process those abuses very well. So what does the diet have to do with it? Diet today is all about comfort food for most people. Nobody wants to be disciplined in their eating. Most of the people, it's my family, it's all comfort eating. They had donuts in the house. I bought some watermelon, a big watermelon last week. Nobody wants it because there were donuts in the house. Hell, donuts taste better than the watermelon. So we have gotten used to using food as comfort, not nourishment. So let's just clearly understand that black men are not health problems because of their diet as much as they are the reasons they're eating the way they're, the comfort, the need for comfort, but they haven't healed their emotional trauma.
But what you're talking is major. This is what the whole thing of the King's Corner is black mental health. We are now just focusing, though, my generation, and as a baby boomer, you know, number one, statistically, at the way the CDC rates it, is that 65 is the life expectancy for a boomer. I've exceeded that, you know, and the thing that we're looking at is the thing of mental health, because we did not want that stigma in the communities, and now we're just now beginning to tap into black therapy, being able to help our children. If we had had mental health dealing with children, aged by these traumas and things would happen, you would have a different generation. But we're not even focused on our children and how they are being damaged with PTSD. You have children that live in communities, especially in Chicago, living in war zones, and that's the same as being in an actual war in the military. They have PTSD, and how are they getting helped? By comfort food, by not allowing them to voice their opinion or distracting them through this AI. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to begin to do and looking at the tools, because we know how we have been damaged. What are the things to repair the children? And what is the thing that is causing this type of trauma to be born into a child that becomes autistic? Is because something happened with that development in the womb, or it happened, as you say, when it comes out of the womb, the first things is done to it.
So you said something important. What can we do to heal? What can we do to correct? What can we do to change this situation? And one of the things I observed in that documentary, the two minds that come together, whether it's two minds, there's a scripture that says when two or more gathered together, then the Messiah is in the midst of it. Christ is in the midst of it. Or the Spirit of Truth, I like to say, is in the midst of it. When two people come together and agree, that's why I believe conversation, healthy conversation, is so important. I'm always grateful when you come on and we can have a healthy conversation, when I can read comments and we can have a healthy conversation, because that to me is where the solution begins or continues, is when people are coming together and talking and not yelling at each other and not calling each other names and not blaming each other. I wish that the woman in the documentary, Marjorie Ann Stubblefield is her name, had had more time to talk to his parent, his mother and his brother, about why she and Derek had this close relationship. More time. I'm sure she tried to have a conversation with the mother, but when you have a God-fearing, Southern-rooted, African-American attitude, it's going to be limited conversation. That's how it is.
And I watched the documentary, I had a different perspective of it, because she had in her mind, that was her, like you keep saying, that was a grown man. She kept calling him a what? A baby.
Her,
she never seen
mother.
That he was a man. He was a grown man.
Yeah, the mother did. Part of the problem. That was part of the problem. Not, that's part of the challenge, let's say. When this woman has had sexual relations with your son, and you're saying, well, no, you can't do that because that's my baby. What? There's a disconnect.
But what
here
if, right, but you're looking at the same thing. Her oldest son with a PhD, if it had been the reverse, if she had had a relationship with her PhD son, you would have had a different movie.
Absolutely. But because the mother, as I started out with the show today, because mothers have such a close relationship with their babies who are damaged by the medical system, that's the way I see it, is almost the majority of these children who are diagnosed with cerebral palsy, autism, brain damage, that's what it is, inflammation in the brain. Where did it come from? Well, we know pretty much 99% of it came from the medical system's decision to give drugs, inject drugs into these children. So mothers who have to go through that, as she said, remember in that document she said, I was in that hospital pacing the floor. I was caring for that baby. I had to go through all that stress. She's in PTSD. Mom is in PTSD, in my opinion. Daisy's in PTSD from years and years of watching her child unable to function as a normal human being. So she has PTSD.
What I'm sharing, and the thing is that before that child even came into the world to know that it had these, what was the situation? And she talked about her husband and the relationship that happened where she became a single mother. What was the abuse or things that happened to her that put that feeling into that child before it even came into the world? Damaged that child before it even came into the world. So we don't know all of the circumstances. We just seen the story that they portrayed and saying that this is what happened to this handicapped child, that someone took advantage of him. It wasn't totally taken advantage of because you gave permission for them to work together in private. You put two adults in a room together, you're going to create situations that human experience shows. A male and a female together.
And let's just look at the situation, as you pointed out, before that child was even conceived. If the relationship with the mother and the father was poor or unhealthy or not good, then that's the beginning of the hormones in the mother that are not even going to be strong enough to grow a healthy baby. So you've got, like you said, you've got a condition in the mother that was probably affected by her relationship with the father. And then the pregnancy occurs. So during that pregnancy, yeah, you're right. We don't know what was going on with the mother and the father, but boy, it probably wasn't good because he took off shortly after the baby was born, or maybe shortly after he determined that this was not a healthy child or a normal child. So here's the thing, Kwame. You have hundreds of thousands of situations like that, but they don't produce autistic children. They don't produce disabled children. The condition of the mother and the child in the womb is determined by relationships and all that. But when they bring in an injection of a drug, throws the whole consequences, circumstances off. And each child will develop certain health problems depending on the state of mom when she was pregnant. So you're right. We don't know the whole story. But I can pretty much determine from what I've experienced thus far, when a child has that type of disability early in life, it probably had something to do with a brain swelling up from drugs. That ignorant communities allow to be injected into their children, especially when the pregnancy or the relationship is poor. That sets up
I see your point, but it's not always, because we have a lot of damaged children that are sitting in juvenile detention centers, sitting in prison with mental health problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Damaged mental health. Wasn't no medication. It was the environment. Like Dr. Gabor Monte always said, an addict comes from environment and trauma. Environment and trauma causes mental damage. It doesn't.
Yeah, and
you have many labels.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We don't know if they had an injection, first of all. So, yeah, the people, the children in these institutions, we don't know. Most of them probably did, because since the 50s or earlier, they've been injecting babies with hepatitis B and all these other shots that they don't need. So the likelihood that they had an injection is pretty high. But the abuses go on from there, whether it's mental abuse, sexual abuse, all kinds of abuses in a dysfunctional home that create these children who are in these mental institutions or in care of other people other than their parents. Yeah, the factors are many, but today what we're suggesting, Kwame and all of you who are here, is stop looking at medication as a solution. And start looking at meditation. As that woman demonstrated, she started meditating for herself first. She started meditating, spending time, eyes closed, breathing, bringing a different picture to your reality, your circumstances, your environment. Okay, Kwame, so you mentioned the environment has affected these children. How about meditating on the perfect environment? Quantum healing is about creating a picture that you want to see, not what's there, but creating a vision, creating a reality from the cosmic perfect order of things so that it comes into manifestation. That's what our final point tonight.
I see your point.
Accepting what the is Dharma Brothers and all this. And create a new reality. That's what Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton, all these great teachers are showing us, is that we can create a new reality and not be like the Johnsons all over the world who's, oh, I'm just going to accept it. And even though, yeah, like Naima said, Dolores Kim says some of these souls are here to show manifest disabilities, to teach others, us around, observing lessons. But then there's those who we can make a difference. If we choose, it's our choice. It's choose life, not death. This child, to me, is in a death mode. He's being tortured in his body by the drugs, mainly, that they're inflicting. Who? Suppressing your desire to masturbate. What drug? My friend told me that's probably saltpeter. Do you remember? You know what saltpeter is, don't you, Kwame?
Yes.
Something like
they
that.
Gave it in the military, and...
Okay, that's what
they
use.
And they still use it in prison.
Yeah. So what that puts to me, that just puts him in a prison, in internal prison, and torture. They're torturing that. That's what I see in these young men who are being drugged and who are autistic, is they're being tortured. Instead of being freed and put on some herbs or being parents who are meditating around them and creating a quantum healing environment and atmosphere, they're being tortured. The look in their eyes, the movement in their bodies is saying, I don't really want to be on this drug, but I don't really see any option. So I'm going to continue in this disabled state that I'm in. And people are going to learn from me, that's for sure, because I'm going to be this way, and they're going to have to learn to accept it. That's what people are doing, accepting the disability instead of creating a new environment. So we take a break tonight. We take a breathing break tonight, and we ask all of you, let's see, we got a couple of callers here, so let me open up the mic. 336-350, that's Mama AZ, you're first. And then we have 773-483, you're next. Mama AZ, go ahead. Nice. Thank you for joining us this evening. Mama AZ, your mic is open. Check your mute button. Okay. Let me go.
Okay,
to...
Dr. B.
Yeah, there you are. Go ahead, speak.
Thank you so much, and thank us, Brother Kwame, because you are so on point, the both of you. And Dr. V, I very much would like to dedicate this show to the Lewis family, meaning my firstborn. My mother pumped me with all kinds of saltpeter and all kinds of things. That's another show. And my firstborn came to the planet anyway. And I'd like to dedicate this also not only to my daughter Shannon Lewis, but her whole tribe, because there are issues. Even I'd like to dedicate this show to my granddaughter. I call her my medicine woman, Marie. That woman, and just like Dr. Lateef said, like the Lord's canon. See, it bothers me when melanated people, they don't freaking get it, especially if they're locked down in a doggone philosophy of Christianity. They don't freaking get it. But I go back to what Dr. Lateef says in the teachings of the Lord's canon, even though she's a Caucasian woman, you know, they chose to do this. This is what I told my daughter today. My granddaughter is acting up religiously, and her and her mom chose this to teach. That's the bottom line. I can't put it any other way, you know, and we got to get off of this BS racism. You know, there are people who look like us. You would swear they were Caucasian, thinking, but they're in a body that looks like ours. So it really doesn't always have to do with racism. They keep it rolling to still keep you distracted. Our people are the most distracted people on this freaking planet that I have ever seen. And when I say our people, I mean people who look like you and I, Brother Kwame. I'm watching things. I mean, you know, this is another show. But today is a one, meaning dropping knowledges, planting seeds, and I love the freaking bejesus out of you, Dr. V. You have given me a dose of B12 with this show. So I'll be quiet. And I'm not joking. I'm not BSing you by the freeway, child. You're a trip in a good way. And I love you for that.
And thank you for bringing in the number today. That means unity. The one is about unity. So if we can leave this show tonight feeling a sense of unity about where we need to go with this, it's meditate, not medicate. And that's the message I want to bring to the Johnson. And I've been bringing that to this other autistic family on YouTube. They're the Howard family, and that's my maiden name. So synchronicity is...
Oh,
no.
What? Howard? Oh, Dr. V, you see, you got to pay attention, family. When these names come up, when you see a name flash across your screen on any minute, you find out, why did that name appear? Because that's
right.
The tall ones, the universe, the big ones communicating with you, like Dr. Blair and the Bobby Hemmings and those ones. So, okay, thank us. Thank you.
And so if we can walk away tonight in some unity about medication versus meditate. Revelation says that they were deceived. Now, this is the Christian book. Revelation is part of the Christian book. So if you're God-fearing, going to church every Sunday, reading your Bible, and you miss Revelation that says they were deceived by pharmakeia, pharmacy. You're telling us on a documentary that's going worldwide, you love God, you reading the Bible, and you're saying, oh, my goodness, he's masturbating. I had to put him on a drug. What? That's not what the Bible says to do. So I'm just had enough of these hypocrites. I know the Bible backwards and forwards, in and out. And so they can't tell me anything about the Bible if using the Bible or Christianity for a solution of let's give him another drug because he's, let's go to another caller, please. I want to hear from you, 773-483.
Oh, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, is that Brother Kofi?
Yes, the Aboriginal American, unbothered, the whole matrix system when you buy into that African-American slavery mindset, you're going to be lost. Growing my plants in back, my garden. I know I'm a Cherokee Indian from my family. I got Cherokee land. I'm a bother because I know they're not going to stop trying to get us to adopt their ways. I know they, and I'm going to say this, and I heard this from a guy from India. He goes, 90% of the people in the world are retarded. I go, wow. They're not able to think for themselves, you know. So I understand that, and I practice self-preservation.
Yeah, that probably is pretty close to me. There's a lot of insanity out there.
I'm like an eagle. I'm like a king bee, flying above all this madness. They're gonna do what they do, and that's what they do. And just laugh about it and understand that that's what science and this world technology is going to do. And I believe in self-governing. Self-governing. Stop buying into all this reparation stuff. I'm under self. That's just my take. I'm self-governing myself while I'm watching everybody else act like clowns and obey whatever's been said. You know, it's amusing, but.
I was thinking about Minister Sophia when you helped her after her amputation. You went to that woman's house. And offered, she was having a lot of problems healing her amputation. They had to cut off both her legs. She had diabetes. They didn't give her a liver or a kidney. And you went to her house. What did you do for her? Her wound was not healed. What is it that you did for her that helped that wound to heal?
Yeah. Her left leg wasn't being healed. And they wanted to reamputate above the knee. So I went, she heard me, went to the house, and she saw me like, don't be scared, Kofi, you can do it. I was scared. She invited her doctor to come see what I was doing, and I just washed it, took Q-tips, took the white tissue off. I call it neck bone. It looked like a neck bone. It was full of tissue, white tissue, pus. So I took his tissue with my gloves on and wiped away the tissue and just poured the spirulina water on it about 20 times. And then I caked it on there the last time. And I looked up, and she was asleep. I walk around, I go, I'm done. She goes, I can feel my feet, you know. And she went to the doctor a couple of weeks later. And they're like, you got skin growing on your amputation. What happened? She says, this guy Kofi put the stuff in my leg and it's healed. I don't have to get reamputated. So it was a blessing on blessing.
That experience for all of us was so powerful because Minister Cynthia was one of the wisest women we knew. And she taught us a lot. But then you, people like yourself who had the knowledge of herbs and healing, had to come in and bring relief for her during a time of total involvement in the medical system, a lot of ignorance, fortunately, because nowadays people with diabetes don't have to have their legs cut off. But if you don't know how to meditate and get to people like yourself, off they go. And I remember her saying
she just trusts me, and I just trusted herbs. I'm not nothing big. I used on my leg and I was cut on my thigh and it sealed the skin, and I just, you know, I was the first guinea pig, and she allowed me to share what nature taught me, and she got what she wanted. So I'm no better than anybody else. I just use common sense. It helped my scar heal. I didn't have to get stitches, and it helps her amputated leg. You know, so yes. I use nature. It's nothing big, no big science about it. I just use nature remedies, and it worked. That's all.
We're all here to offer some relief to all these 90% of insane people that we have to deal with, and we offer it once or twice. They reject, they reject. You know, I'm at a point in my life, I'm not moved by rejection anymore. I used to get all down and out when people didn't want to take my advice. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. Oh, dear, they don't like me. It's resistance now. I call it resistance. They're not rejecting me. They're not rejecting you. It's called resistance. And like you said, we got so many people on this planet who are insane.
You know what you have? You know what you have that I have? It's called a savior's complex.
I did, not anymore. I don't have that anymore.
Trying to help everybody else. But guess who you save? Guess who advice you take? Take your own. I'm telling
you. That's right.
All right.
That's why I promote Fly every morning. First, love yourself. That's the solution. And I think if Ms. Johnson and that family could really love themselves first, that energy would flow over to Eric, who is the autistic child.
I got a funny story. Her husband saw me doing it, and he was jealous. He thought I was trying to get with Cynthia. My woman trying to get my woman. I said, no, man. They paid me $30. I said, no, I'm just here to just practice. I'm sorry. I just had to share that. Her husband thought I was trying to take her from him.
Well, you know, he was a little autistic himself, so that's normal.
Yeah, I saw that.
But you know what? That you tell that story, they're both transitioned to another realm of existence, but they're still teaching us. And he was autistic. Let's tell you a story, too, about him. Minister Cynthia's husband, she kept wanting me to help him get off his medication. And she's in Chicago, Cynthia, because, you know, he's under a doctor's care. I'm in Florida. And whatever is going on in his life, I'm not the one to fix it. See, that's what I had. No savior situation. It's like I'm too far away. And she wanted him off that medication so bad, but it wasn't going to happen with me, and it didn't happen with anybody else. And he's gone now. She's gone. But the lesson sometimes people are asking for help, and you just have to say, I'll pray for you.
You know the competition of us naturopaths? It's the pharmaceutical, you've been speaking that so loud. That's the, who gave you the power of bringing natural healing? I'm going to listen to my doctor. You need to talk to my doctor first. And I knew, I used to have doctors call me, what you give my patients? Herbs? I would hang up the phone. They would get mad, you know. And I realized that naturopaths and the pharmaceutical industry are in a battle. So it comes down to being a person.
Right,
naturopath, naturopath and nature's healing and pharmaceutical medication healing, that's pharmaceutical drugs, chemicals, to what it does, it numbs the symptoms that you're having, but it doesn't correct. That is the issue that we're having. You're just speaking upon that. You're like the prodigal child of that. So I realize it's up to the people to make their own personal decision.
Right. So let me go to the mic. Let's see. Naima's saying Nelson is in your studio. What mic am I opening up? Let me just read this comment. Tomorrow, author Januko TikTok
says, Admiral Nelson Bay.
Good morning, mindfulness. She's an entrepreneur. Joins the conference.
Can I say this before you allow them to talk real quick? What I told a lot of my patients, I looked at the back of your wrist, and I go, what color is your blood? They go, red. I go, look at the back of your wrist. Oh, it's blue, it's green. Okay, there it is. And they woke up. They're like, my blood is green. I go, all right, now let's go. That was a turning point. When you realize your blood is green, if you cut your skin, it turns red from the oxygen. But we are blooded green. Look at the back of your wrist. Yeah, what color is the back of your wrist?
Back of my wrist is in blue vein. But,
I'm done.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, thank you. I have a comment here from Stolen. This is why I wrote the book Stolen Intellect, Recovering the Missing Link to Generational Health. Okay, Stolen. So, if you want to put the link to your book, we'll share. I don't know. My computer's starting to act up. Enter studio. I'm backstage. Okay, whatever. Leave the studio. Come back. Enter studio. Naima, I don't know what my opening for you for. I have 347-498. Are you there? I'm not sure. So I'm going to
call
Mike. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Specifically, what type of sexual activity did the young man have with the woman? Was it vaginal penetration or was it him receiving oral sex from her? Because there is a difference.
We didn't get all the details. Those regular vaginal penetration, I imagine, and they accused her of raping him. So she was probably on top because they claimed there were bruises on his back, and that's why the older brother claimed that she raped him because they were having maybe some hard sex with him on the bottom. I don't know. That's the way it sounds.
You know, it does make a lot of difference. Because actually, I've never engaged in coital or vaginal penetration with a woman or girl in my life before. The only type of sex I've ever had has been receiving fellatio. And it makes all the difference in the world because from my way of thinking, you know, in the Baha'i writings, it says sexual intercourse is only permissible between the man and the woman who is his wife. And that implies coitus or vaginal penetration. I never engaged in that. I know how it's done, but it makes all the difference in the world.
That's information everybody can take home with them. And I'm going to say good night thank you, Nelson, for sharing with us. We always love to hear from you. And we're going to say goodbye to our global family. And I want to thank everybody for sharing tonight because this conversation's not over. I'm sure we're going to hear more about this because this documentary just started. And it was just Friday, I think it was last Friday when it was first opened. So just look forward to I hope that in the bottom line, it will be meditate, no. Meditate, yes. So meditate, not medicate. All right? And my computer is really acting up right now, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to play. Okay, there we go. We're going to try again. Thank you all.
We've come to the end of our show today. If you missed any broadcast, go to our website for the audio and video archive at www.thefemalesolution.com. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family joining us from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, xiexie. India, zhanyeba. Japan, arigato. Korea, kamsahamnida. Russia, spasibo. Germany, danke. Poland, zhongguyao. France, merci. Spain, grazie. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, majaz. Nigeria, esa. South Africa, India, Bonga, Senegal, Jere, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Sukriya, Afghanistan, Ashokur, Saudi Arabia, and Palestine, Shukran, Assalam, Alaikum, Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. Thank you, and may peace be upon you, and bless you God, and God's blessing.
Oh boy, my computer is playing lots of games with me, so I don't think you're going to be able to see me on the screen because it just flew away. But anyway,
thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.